While you're sleeping, Gunther is watching endless hours of alien programming on his DVR. Afternoons on 1320 KFAN.
Fan, he's Kyle Gunther. I'm Ben Anderson. One of the things we've talked about recently, and I'm not going to dive into this specifically. Don't change your dial. Give me a minute to explain here. We've talked a little bit about Tom Brady and his relationship with Donald Trump and whether or not it's something you should look into and say, well, if a player is friends with this guy or if a player has this type of view, should I not root for that player? Something we've talked about a little bit. There's a new name to add to this list of controversial people with controversial opinions, and his name is Kyrie Irving.
Kyrie Irving, known as, say, a uncontroversial guy at Duke, only got hurt, eight games into the year, or he would have been even higher than number one pick.
It would have been, the supernova pick. He just would have been assumed the number one pick. But looking at Kyrie Irving, he was on a plane today and was asked about just some of his beliefs, and he revealed that he belongs to the Flat Earth Society.
The Flat Earth Society is a proud society, Ben. You don't have to explain it. I mean, it's the society of people who think the Earth is
sounds like. And this is what he says. It's right in front of our faces, said Kyrie. I'm telling you, it's right in front of our face. They lie to us. Now, he was recording a podcast on a plane, which Kyrie attempted to use as evidence for his claims. He said, what I've been taught is the Earth is round. But if you really think about it from a landscape of the way we travel, the way we move, and the fact that, can you really think of us rotating around the sun and all the planets aligned, rotating in specific dates, being perpendicular with what's going on with these planets?
Well, yeah, because we've seen it with telegraphs.
Jefferson, former jazz man, interjected, said, how are you going to put planets in quotations? Apparently he said planets as if they don't actually exist. So, you root for whatever celebrities you want. This is, though, why I bring this up is people will look at Tom Brady and say, well, look, I can't support Tom Brady. He supports a president I don't support. Don't assume you know everything about every athlete who you've never heard them open their mouth, because as soon as they do, you may love Kyrie Irving and then realize that he believes in just utter nonsense.
Oh, I love him even more now.
You may not believe in gravity. Oh, I don't know.
I really love him even more now. I think that Kyrie Irving's a guy that doesn't just believe the first thing he's told. Now, I always think that you should judge your favorite athletes entirely by their political views, their social views, their music views. How else are you supposed to judge an athlete? What am I supposed to have my own political views? No, that hurts my brain to think of my own views. So I just want to make sure I know what a few celebrities think so I can make fun of them, because I don't want to honestly interject my own thoughts at a cocktail party. No, I want to have pre-memorized bullet points ready to rock. That's why I love Fox News. Every morning I wake up, they give me 3 or 4 bullet points that I can just fire right in the face of my stupid liberal friends.
A couple words you need to know next time you go to a dinner party. Benghazi.
Oh, flat earth.
Impeachment.
Impeachment.
Flat earth. Colin Kaepernick.
Muslim ban.
Just say things like
because
that.
Because you'd be in jail. Ooh,
love that one. Not a travel
ban. Because you'd be in jail.
Not a ban on countries with ties to terrorism, but a Muslim ban.
CBS Sports did release their top 50 NBA players of all time. Updated today with their top 50 players. We saw this come out in the mid-90s. John Stockton, Karl Malone, Pete Maravich, former jazz players, made the list. CBS Sports in their newest 50 does not have Pistol Pete on the list, but they do have, no surprise, Michael Jordan, number one overall.
Why didn't more guys, or maybe it's just because they couldn't, why don't more guys try to be Pistol Pete or Jason Williams, White Chocolate? I mean, I assume that's where Jason Williams got his inspiration from. You know, it's not sideshow stuff. It's not all Harlem Globetrotter stuff. You know, if you have really impressive handle, sure, to the point where you can embarrass people, well, that's part of your swagger. And then guys will start to think, instead of defending you straight up, they'll think, well, I don't want to get embarrassed by Pistol Pete. They start thinking about your gobbledygook and the spin and the ball tricks.
Here's the thing that happened on Wednesday. I tweeted out, and you saw it if you watched the Jazz game when they knocked off the Portland Trail Blazers. You saw, and I'm thinking of one possession specifically, Dante Exum take C.J. McCollum off the dribble. He went between the legs. He did the inside-out dribble, beat him off the dribble, and got a layup. And he thought, okay, that's a great move. And after the game, I asked Quinn Snyder. I said, it looks like Dante looked more aggressive in isolation. Is that something you're looking for? And he said, nope. So, no, we want him aggressive in transition, but he's never supposed to be aggressive in isolation because we don't play an isolation game. Now, if we draw up a play that's a, you know, a box and one, or we draw up a play where there's supposed to be guys in the four corners, then we're going to give the ball to one player in Alec Burks, in Gordon Hayward, and say, go make a play, go out there and do something for us. Okay, that's the design, but that's really never the design for most players. How many guys actually do that? More than three or four times a game. Kobe may have taken six isolation shots a game. Michael may have taken six isolation shots a game, but it's not good for your offense. It's not good for your defense to have a guy dribble down, not pass the ball, try and dribble a couple of times and get to the hoop, unless you can do it every time down, which is why Jordan did it, which is why Kobe were able to do it five times a game and have success doing it.
Which is also why you hear about free agents not wanting to come to the Jazz, because this was the case with Jerry Sloan, too. You know, there are teams like the Houston Rockets that are going to tell James Harden, look, if you sign with us, we're going to give you the keys to the car, the keys to the house, the keys to the block. You do whatever you want. Some players want that. Clearly, James Harden did. I'm not sure he's more likely to win a championship now than he was with the Thunder. But Durant, Westbrook, they don't have a title either.
Right.
So, you know, maybe there's something to be said for the team aspect of the NBA. Maybe, though, you need to get the hell out of some superstars' way. Maybe Spoelstra learned that through his time in Miami, that, you know, maybe you just need to tell Dwayne Wade and LeBron nothing. Maybe you need to let them do their thing. Remember, when we're talking about pros in this instance, they've been coached for a long time. They've heard a lot of different guys tell them how to play the game. None of those guys could play the way they could. No one can teach you to be Russell Westbrook. You have to remember that as a pro athlete, and that's why we hear about these guys that are sometimes, they're called, he's difficult to coach. DeMarcus Cousins, to defend Boogie Cousins, I'm not saying he has a great attitude, but
sure.
No one who's ever coached Boogie could block one of his shots. No one who's ever coached Boogie did anything nearly what he did. Why should Boogie Cousins listen to John Calipari? Why should he listen to Ty Corbin or Stinky Vlade Divac? He's had six coaches in Sacramento. Why should Boogie listen to any of those guys?
If he wants to win games, you can. But you're right. If you want to go, but that is, I mean, that's why Ty Corbin failed as a coach. I mean, Ty Corbin's thought was, did you play the game? I mean, that was his response to media members. He wanted to say it every single time. Did you play? Well, Jeff Van Gundy never played at a high level, and Jeff Van Gundy can coach circles around you, Ty Corbin. I mean, if you really want to get into that, Quinn Snyder quit after college. He can coach circles around you as a coach, and you had a 14-year NBA career. I mean, in that sense, if you want to play better.
But you have to challenge guys differently. If you have a playing career, then you have to use that to your advantage versus, you know, what's Mark Walton going to say about his playing
career? Luke Walton.
Luke Walton.
Yeah.
Who the hell is Mark Walton?
Doesn't exist. You're thinking Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, definitely am.
He had a bad career.
Luke Walton.
Big fan of the Patriots, though.
Not going to be able to tell you, man, just do it like I did.
Sure.
But also, he's going to understand how far he can and cannot push a player.
LeBron James comes in at number two on this list. Wilt Chamberlain comes in at number three. Magic at four. Kareem at five. Bill Russell, six. Tim Duncan, seven. Larry Legend comes in at number eight. Number nine, Shaq, and number 10, Kobe Bryant.
What about Lew Alcindor?
Yeah, he comes in at number six, I think, as I mentioned, or what did I say?
You said Kareem was in there.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar came in at number five. First local player to make the list is Karl Malone. He still comes in at number 16. It's really deserved. Carl's going to be forgotten a little bit because he played in Utah, because he never won a championship, because he hasn't made a celebrity out of himself post-playing career, but he was as dominant a force as we saw in the 90s, not named Michael Jordan. And yeah, the Jazz came up short twice against the Hakeem-led Houston Rockets in 95 and 96 when they should have had, or 94 and 95 when they should have gone out and probably won those championships. That was certainly their window to get out there and do it. But he's the second all-time leading scorer, 14-time All-NBA player, two-time MVP. I mean, he's as incredible as I've ever seen.
Karl Malone, one of the hardest workers, too, ever in the history of the NBA. One of the first guys to pioneer having an actual weightlifting career off the floor. A lot of guys thought that weights would mess up their jump shot. And, yeah, maybe if you're trying to go out there and break a deadlifting record, it could mess with things. But weight training can lead to injury prevention. It can lead to you having more muscle mass. I mean, obviously, Karl Malone showed you what the benefits are, but few guys could mimic his work ethic. He operates now as a grown man in the 21st century with a flip phone. In fact, there's kind of a funny photo out there of Karl Malone and John Stockton sitting at a dinner table together, both with their flip phones out. They're throwbacks in every sense of the word. They played in an era where you were expected to be paid for 82 games, and you were going to play 82 games.
John Stockton comes on this list on number 23. He played 19 years in the NBA and missed 22 games, and he tore his ACL. He tore his ACL. He has a career 22 missed games. George Hill has 22 missed games this season. He's missed 22 games this year with a toe injury.
Well, now, no one's saying George Hill should have played with a broken toe.
But there are different ways to play the game.
But Stockton, I'm sure, broke a few toes and fingers and rolled a few ankles during that time. I guarantee it. He fractured a few ribs. He went out there, he pulled a few muscles, and he fought through it.
All right, let's welcome in our next guest, NFL agent. You can find him on Twitter at Brennan Sports as he gets his players ready now for the NFL Combine, including local Andrew Idy from BYU. It is Evan Brennan. Evan, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Evan.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me on, guys.
Well, we're excited for the draft. All the guys are getting ready now for the combine, and there's a lot of pressure certainly on some local guys to run well at the combine. It's pretty universally agreed upon, though. Garrett Bowles is the top local prospect, the tackle out of the University of Utah. Does Garrett Bowles have to run well to prove that his resume is legit, or is he just a bona fide first-round pick, in your opinion?
You know, my opinion doesn't matter that much. It's the opinion of those NFL scouts that I talk to that does. The NFL scouts that I talk to about Garrett felt very comfortable with him getting into the first round. And if he runs well, it will only help him. There's not true left tackles in this draft. It's actually pretty poor offensive line draft. So the fact that he is a true left tackle really helps his stock up in that first round.
Evan, I want to ask you about not just approaching players, but kind of general advice that you think most kids coming out of college have that they need to get rid of. Like, what's a mindset that most college kids have when they're trying to make the pros that you need to say, hey, you've got to untrain that out of yourself and you've got to change into this type of mindset?
Entitlement. I mean, what I tell a lot of guys is at the end of the summer, whether you're signed or drafted, about 1,100 to 1,200 players are about to lose their jobs, and that could be you. So you got to come in, and you've got to really take somebody else's job, somebody that's got a wife, kids, a mortgage, and has been playing the NFL for a little while. And if you can't do that, well, you're going home.
You know, have you seen the NFL change the way it evaluates quarterbacks at all the last few years, or do you see them having to in the future? Because, I mean, seemingly everyone outside of the Big Ten and maybe USC now, and I guess maybe BYU going forward, everyone's running this spread style on offense. Is that changing the way the NFL views college quarterbacks?
Yeah, I don't think spread guys are as pro-ready necessarily as some of the traditional pocket passers are. And so NFL teams, when they draft those guys, for the most part, are really going to have to sit back and say, hey, is this a guy that can help us right away? Or is this guy that's going to have to sit in our system for a couple years? If you looked at some of the first rounders the last couple years, they've either been air raid guys or they've been pro-style guys. And then you see some of the spread guys going kind of later in the draft or in the mid-rounds.
NFL agent Evan Brennan's our guest, 1320K fan. Evan, when you do look at some of these players, and again, you mentioned, you know, you're going to have to go out and steal somebody's job, but if you're a player who's coming out who's under-recruited and then, you know, doesn't necessarily get an invite to the combine, well, what mindset do they have to have? What do you tell those types of guys to say, just because you're not showing up in a 7-round mock draft doesn't mean you can't make the NFL? I mean, are there stories of other guys you point to, or how do you keep that confidence up?
So I present a guy named Ben Gottschalk. He started center for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, was undrafted, actually played left tackle in college at Southern Methodist, and then they shot him inside, but he was intelligent enough, was tough enough, picked up the system really quickly, bonded with his coaches, and first and foremost just got that it was a privilege to be there, but he belonged, and he was really going to have to go take somebody else's job. And guys that can't get that really quickly with limited reps, they're going home, and the quicker you can understand that, the better and better you'll succeed, no matter where you're drafted or not drafted.
I know you represent Andrew Edie, the tackle out of BYU. What role did the offense at BYU play in his evaluation process, and what do you make of his NFL stock right now?
Well, generally, you put your best offensive lineman in general at left tackle, and so the fact that Andrew Idy, 2 years removed from playing on the defensive line at Southern Utah, was able to transfer to BYU, only playing 1 year at offensive line, and was entrusted to be the left tackle, probably the most valuable member of the offensive line, says a lot to him. He's got a long way to go in terms of learning the position. He's going to be a guard or a center at the next level, but I would strongly, strongly point to his numbers that he's going to put up a pro day. He may be one of the, if not the best testing offensive lineman in the country. Absolutely phenomenal numbers.
As you watch some of these players and you're kind of getting ready to, you know, go out and try and represent a different player, what do you realize is the number one thing that scouts look for? Is it what they look like on the field? Is it measurables? Is it background personally? What do you notice most commonly?
You know, it's a combination of a lot of things, but perhaps one thing I could point to that NFL teams are looking more and more at that perhaps a lot of people aren't really paying attention to is arm length. A lot of great college players are simply getting shut down and cut off and crossed off the list by NFL teams because their arms aren't long enough. They can't block and reach out and grab somebody, or they can't shed blocks because their arms aren't long enough. But really, it's putting together their tape, their athleticism, their measurables, and their character to kind of create a complete composite.
How does the process work as an agent? When do you begin to try to figure out about guys? I mean, are you watching film yourself? Or are you relying on word of mouth? How do you operate?
A little bit of both. I watch a lot of film. I spend hundreds and hundreds of hours throughout the summer and the fall watching film. I cross-check everything that I think about a player with multiple NFL teams as to what they think. And I get tips from NFL teams. I get tips from coaches. I get tips from my current clients about guys. Again, I cross-check it with NFL teams. I usually start that, you know, players redshirt sophomore and junior year when they're kind of draft eligible and then continue it through senior year. But again, I don't draft anybody. If no NFL team likes your guy and you love him, you got a serious problem. Whereas if all the NFL teams like your guy and you only kind of like him, that's a good problem to have.
Evan, we're starting to see some of these regional combines pop up. I know a bunch of local players were just at one in Seattle. Is that good? I mean, is just getting your client in front of as many eyes as possible, is that the goal? Or are there sometimes when guys hurt themselves by being out and exposed in the wrong atmosphere?
You know, it depends. So I think the intention of those regional combines is to get guys that aren't going to have a lot of attendance at their pro day or no pro day at all. I mean, so if you got a guy that goes to a really small school where their NFL scouts just aren't going to go and see him run, I think that's a great opportunity. I would tell clients that are, you know, going to test well, they go to a major school like BYU, like Utah, even Utah State, there's going to be enough scouts at your pro day, you know, really, really get ready for that and make sure that's your best performance. But if you're a guy that goes to a D2 school or small, and you really are not going to have guys at your pro day, then that's what the regional combines are set up for.
You can find him on Twitter at Brennan Sports NFL agent, including representing a local player, Evan Idy. Big thanks, Evan. Appreciate you. Or Andrew Idy, I apologize. Big thanks, Evan, for joining us.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Evan.
Evan Brennan joining us, giving us a breakdown on what it's like to be an agent there and representing a guy like Andrew Idy, who is in an interesting spot here. You know, again, he's a guy who's not showing up on draft boards. He's not a guy who's going to the combine, but why not go at it? Why not go out and chase it if you can get to some of these combines or have your pro day and represent yourself well and show well? I think you're going to see yourself continue to potentially move up. And what's the worst-case scenario? You get invited to a camp and make $10,000 or $15,000? I mean, that's great for Andrew Idy. Even if he never plays professional football, that's a great start to get a little bit of money. Get yourself a car, get yourself an apartment, or pay for a next level of college.
You know, it's interesting to hear about arm length, as that's basically the least thing in your control as an athlete is your dimension. You can't eat to make yourself taller. I mean, you could try. Spud Webb tried it, and he got to 5'6". But that's the thing is, we know who Spud Webb is because he made it in the NBA being the size of a midget. Danny Amendola is tiny. Julian Edelman is tiny. Danny Woodhead is tiny. Yeah. And these guys made the NFL. You know, there's a million success stories. There's a bunch of guys who are not the greatest athletes who played in pro baseball. And that's what's important to remember. If you truly have a dream of playing pro football, you got to commit to it. You got to do it. But yeah, there's a million guys that had that dream and they fell by the wayside. You hope they get their education though. And more so than anything, you hope they can make a couple of bucks in the pro process. And then you start your career with a couple of zeros in the bank.
Speaking of BYU, we're going to get a breakdown on what we should expect coming up here in spring and actually get a breakdown of the Salt Lake Screaming Eagles debut last night with our BYU insider, Mitch Harper. Stay tuned. Gunther and Ben.
On 1320 KFAM.
Gunther and Ben in the afternoon.
That's too much, son. Protect the elite to play with. That's too much, son. Hermes in the aim. That's too much, son. They let me know before I was famous. I had too much, son.
Another Ben, 1320K fan, 624. He's Kyle Gunther. I'm Ben Anderson. A very, very happy Friday to everybody out there.
Too much, socks. They let me know I had too much. You're not supposed to sing with the intro song, Ben. Don't you know that? It's Radio 101, man.
What's too many socks?
Too much sauce.
No, how many socks is too many socks?
I don't double up on socks. I never have. And I've never been that guy who thinks that if you're worried about blisters, you should double up your socks. Yeah. Here's the thing. Blisters used to happen with new shoes because we used to make our shoes overseas. Now, all Nike, Adidas, Under Armour, all the top brands make their shoes in America. Ain't give you no blisters anymore, man.
Is that true?
Nope.
I don't think that's true at all.
Nope, not at all.
Last time I got blisters, I was wearing a brand new pair of shoes, and I wore ankle socks, and I realized, oh, these are actual high tops.
Yeah.
I hadn't worn actual high tops in a really long time, and yeah, they just blistered the heck out of me.
I have recently become a fan of wool socks.
Yeah, like the winter socks, like the snowboarding socks.
Well, I mean, not even necessarily, because some of those socks are too thick. No, just buy normal cut socks, but they're made out of wool instead of cotton, and it's like they never get wet. Because my feet sweat like nobody's business here, but so normally I could wring out my cotton socks after a workout, but the wool socks don't absorb any moisture. So where does that moisture go? Is it leaking into my shoes, or am I just not sweating anymore on my feet?
Let's welcome in our next guest, talking some BYU football as well as the Salt Lake Screaming Eagles, who made their debut last night. You can find him on Twitter at @Mitch_Harper. You can read him at 1320kfan.com and at CougarNation.com. It is Mitch Harper. Mitch, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Mitch.
Hey, happy to be on, guys.
Yeah, so how many fans would you estimate were out there at the Maverick Center watching the Screaming Eagles last night?
Yeah, it was a great atmosphere. I was really excited to see indoor football back in Salt Lake, and the official number we got was like 8,130. So it was a really good crowd.
And that's about capacity.
Yeah, that's about capacity for the Maverick Center. And what was awesome was because I was really curious about the calling your own plays and being a offensive coordinator to call plays in a game. And that app was really, really fun. So fans got a great chance to feel like an offensive coordinator and call an actual game.
So you're just sitting there with the app during the game. You're involved with what they give you, play calling options, or how does it work?
Yeah, it's kind of like Tecmo Bowl. Think back to like where you get those four play options and you choose one, and
right,
and it's up tempo. So it was a lot of fun to see, you know, like, you know, kind of call a play and you get stats in live in game as how well you're doing if your plays are being chosen. So it was a lot of fun, and you know, I think it was a really good atmosphere and a good debut.
I thought that was cool. You said that it lets you know if you chose the right play or the play mm-hmm. that ended up getting ran, and then actually what happened with that play, whether or not you had success with that or whether or not it failed. So it does give you a good understanding of what it's like to be an offensive coordinator. Something you'd recommend going down and checking out?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was a lot of fun. Got to see some of the former players, Devin Mahina, Davion Orfe, who played at Utah. So yeah, I thought it was a really fun experience. I mean, there was a lot of fans that were from the Utah Blaze days, so you probably remember some of those folks, Gunther. But, I mean, yeah, there was a lot of people there, and it was a lot of fun. I think people should definitely get out to the Maverick Center and kind of check out a game.
Sounds like Devin Mahina's still a big target. What do you have, 6 catches or 5 catches?
Yeah, he had a touchdown grab as well. I mean, big, big, tall target. I mean, he was a kid out of high school that he was like a 4-star tight end, you know, one of the nationally rated prospects. He's always had a ton of talent. And seeing him, he was putting that talent on display yet again last night.
So, Mitch, looking at BYU now and switch it up, I want to talk about their quarterback situation, because in the past, last year specifically, there was a quarterback controversy. Who do you go with, Taysom Hill, Tanner Mangum? And obviously they went with Taysom Hill, and I thought it was the right move. I didn't feel that way originally, but they proved me wrong, and they went out, and Ty Detmer knows how to do his job better than I know how to do his job. Who's the backup this year to Tanner Mangum? I mean, what does the depth chart look like, and how realistic is it that somebody's ready to play?
Yeah, that's a great question, because right now, you know, you look at the backup being, I mean, Tanner Mangum's going to be your starter, and after him, Bo Hodge is the likely number two. He got a little bit of time 2 years ago in relief of Tanner Mangum in a game, I believe it was against East Carolina. So he's had some live game action, redshirted a year ago. He's kind of like the comparison would be Taysom Hill, because he naturally likes to run first.
Sure.
Throw second, good athlete. There's a possibility if some of the younger guys, a Cody Wilstead, who's a return missionary, likely going to be the number three quarterback, a 4-star kid out of Pineview High School down in St. George. If he really develops, and he's going to be playing in spring ball, if he takes on that second spot, I wouldn't be surprised that maybe Bo Hodge goes to a wide receiver spot. That was a position he played 3 years in high school. He only played quarterback for 1 year in high school. So Bo Hodge is still kind of learning that position, and have him as your number two. I don't know if BYU feels completely comfortable with that. And then also in June, they'll have a kid in Joe Critchlow, who was once a Southern Utah commit. He's going to be a walk-on, but the connection was there with Ed Lamb, and he'll be eligible this fall. But he's kind of a down the road, maybe a second, third string guy, you know, deep down the road, but likely a redshirt candidate right away.
I'd be stunned if Bo Hodge changes positions, because ESPN analyst Merrill Hodge, no relation, told us in his opinion Bo Hodge was the single greatest quarterback prospect he had ever evaluated. Now, I would be surprised if MLP Moroni Lualu Putu-Tau changed positions, because he's such a great wide receiver, but he's a big dude, and it sounds like he might get some reps at wide receiver, tight end. Could MLP play tight end in the long term?
Yeah, I think this is going to be a full-time change. I think you're going to see Lualu Putu-Tau take on that tight end spot. Him and Tanner Baldry are probably going to be the starters for BYU out of spring ball at that tight end position. Kid and Troy Hines, he's had some setbacks with his hip injuries, and there's concern that maybe he might have to retire from football. They're that bad, injuries. So Lualu Putu-Tau, they're still trying to find a tight end. There's some young, talented kids in the mix for BYU. They also got Joe Tukuwafu, former Utah State commit, who transferred to BYU, who's a return missionary kid that they announced back in December. So there's more options this year, but they're still trying to get creative with that position to get the production that BYU's always been known for at that spot, because in this pro-style offense, Ty Detmer really wants to make the tight end a focal point. With a quarterback like Tanner Mangum, I think they can utilize the tight end position a lot more this season.
Will they bring back a fullback? I mean, is there a chance that we see more of that, or is the fact that they don't really even have a running back right now, that's where the focus
is
going to be?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think Ula Tolu-Tau, he's going to be an interesting study to watch in spring, because size-wise, where's he at physically? There was early reports when he got back from his mission in the fall. He was like at 280 pounds. Hard to imagine as a running back. He's now slimmed down from what I've last heard at 245. So that's on the bigger side. So maybe he's the fullback, and then Squally Canada's the running back for BYU. I think that might be the early thought going in. Braden L. Bakri's a walk-on at fullback who had some production last year. He had that big catch against Michigan State. But I think they'll mainly stay away from the fullback. He'll use it situationally, maybe in the goal line packages. But Tolu-Tau, depending on where he's at physically, he might fit in that fullback spot if they do choose to use that in their offensive packages.
Squally Canada once had an offer to Washington State, to Colorado, Boise State. He was a pretty highly recruited guy. Is he ready to step up and be the full-time number one feature back?
That's a great question, Gunther, because, you know, when I watched Squally, there was a huge issue last year in fall camp with, I mean, holding on to the football. He was fumbling the ball. I mean, go back to the Vegas Bowl, his first play at BYU, he fumbled the football. And that was a huge concern all throughout spring last year and fall camp. I think he made some strides and made progress last season as Jamal Williams' backup. But still, is he a feature back? I don't know quite yet. I think a guy that's going to be really interesting to watch is Riley Burt. You go back to 2 years ago, former track and field kid out of Box Elder High. Every time he touched the ball 2 years ago, special teams or at running back, he was getting at least 7 or 8 yards a play. I mean, the kid's, he's one of the fastest players on the team this year. And I think he's got a real opportunity to maybe be a mover and a shaker at BYU this year and possibly fight for that starting role. But I think Squally gets the early nod to win that job. But it's going to be, I think, a running back by committee, because there's just no clear-cut number one guy right now.
You can find him on Twitter at Mitch_Harper. Read him at 1320kfan.com. And Cougar Nation is our BYU insider, Mitch Harper. Mitch, thanks for joining
us. Thanks, Mitch.
Hey, no problem, guys.
There he is, our BYU insider, Mitch Harper, giving us a breakdown on the latest with BYU. And he was at the game last night for the Salt Lake Scream and Eagles. Again, you can go check him out online, slseagles.com. BYU spring football is going to be fun. I mean, I think both of our spring footballs are going to be fun here in the state of Utah. Utah's quarterback battle is going to be really interesting between Troy Williams and Cooper Bateman. It's actually, I think, the first true quarterback battle we've had in the state since, what, Travis Wilson was a sophomore? Last year it wasn't. I know a lot of people thought it was. No, Troy Williams was the guy. That's why Utah offered him as early as they did when he was at the community college ranks and knew he was going to come in and be the guy. It's really been a while since Utah had a true quarterback battle. And even then, I don't think it was as a sophomore for Travis Wilson, because he was starting towards the end of his freshman season. You don't start a freshman and then not give him the keys to the car as a sophomore.
Yeah, it was probably Travis Wilson as a freshman trying to beat out, was it John Hayes?
John Hayes. Was Jordan Wynn still maybe around? I think beat up, coming off an injured year, but still
that's
around.
That's what it was. Jordan Wynn had been hurt and was trying to come back, and you realized the shoulder just wasn't going to hold up. So, yeah, I'm not even sure Travis Wilson had to actually beat anyone out.
It might have been Terrence Kane. Jordan Wynn might have been the last real quarterback battle at Utah.
Terrence Kane did start a year there, too. I think you're right there. Now, Kendall Thompson was never competing with Travis Wilson for the job. My goodness, Kendall Thompson right. could never throw. Ben and I told you that his first practice in fall camp. We said, with all due respect, this guy throws like Charles Barkley golfs. There is a hitch in his giddy up. It was so painfully obvious. I was stunned to hear Kyle Whittingham and Dave Christensen. In fact, well, they did it. They did put Kendall Thompson in against Oregon State. They had to bench him in the first half because Oregon State ran cover zero all game. They didn't put a safety back once. They said, we know this kid can't throw. I'm amazed Jim Mora didn't figure that out at UCLA. It tells me Jim Mora didn't scout Utah at all.
I'm not surprised Dave Christensen did it. I'm a little surprised, yeah, that Jim Mora didn't figure that out. But
yeah, maybe I'm not surprised about Dave Christensen. With all due respect, Dave is a lineman who loves linemen and loves running the ball.
I'm curious to see what the offensive linemen look from BYU and Utah, what the front five look like coming out of spring, and then how that changes throughout fall. But I think those are going to be interesting battles. The secondary at Utah is going to be really interesting in spring because you're just not going to have all the bodies there you want, though some of those JUCO kids should come in and be able to compete for the spot. Quarterbacks at Utah going to be the big story, where that was the big story last year at BYU. Running backs going to be interesting at BYU this year, where that was the running. That was kind of the big conversation yesterday or last year at Utah.
You know, Squally Canada is the clear number one, but he's not been without his injuries. You know, and you need some depth. You need to figure that out. But Squally Canada is good enough and ready to go to carry that load. He's not going to be a 35 carry a game back like Jamal Williams, but you can't ever compare another running back to Jamal Williams. It's unfair. Don't do it. They're not going to live up to it.
Coming up next, football at 50. We're going to take a look at the debut of the Screaming Eagles and what happened to the quarterbacks that committed to the Pac-12 classes in 2013 and 2014. Some of these numbers are going to stun you. Stay tuned. Gunther and Ben.
On 1320 KFAN.
Gunther and Ben. Weekdays 3 to 7 on 1320 KFAN and 1320KFAN.com.
Gunther and Ben, 1320 KFAN, 644, Kyle Gunther, Ben Anderson. So what's in the box Friday? We had great food today from Legend Sports Pub.
Oh, man, they took great care of us today. The calzones are amazing. I don't think we've ever had the calzones before, but they'll change anything you want on the menu into a wrap, or they'll give you breakfast all day long. Do whatever you want there. They've got great menu items at Legends, 677 South, 200 West.
I didn't even realize that we got the mozzarella sticks today. We were so enamored with the calzones. We dug into the calzones and thought, man, that's just filling and great food and the flavors there. We didn't look for anything else, and still in the box, in the what's in the box, was the mozzarella sticks, which is one of our favorites.
That's because Mitch hid them from us. He took them immediately when we weren't looking and hid them from us. Can I ask you a personal question, Ben?
Please.
You seem to be pretty connected with the internet stuff. I've asked you before for help with some internet memes that I don't understand. Here's one I've been seeing a lot, and I just need some context on it. The meme goes something like this. What are those? No, it's not what are those. I found out about those very recently, though. I'm a
good ones.
I'm ashamed to admit that. What is the meme that says you versus the guy she told you not to worry about?
Yeah.
What does that mean? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. I've sent out a you versus the guy not to worry. She told you not to worry about.
It's
making fun of finding yourself in the friend zone. So there's some self-deprecating humor in it. It's when you're talking to a girl, and let's say a girl says, oh, I'm just going to go hang out with this other guy. Don't worry about him. You don't need to sweat him. Dave DeNoel is your you versus the guy who she told you not to worry about. Redbird told you, oh, I'm just going to go hang out with Dave DeNoel. We're just going to go to a concert.
She told me she was going to go to a concert many years ago.
And then you look at a picture of Dave DeNoel, and you realize, oh, man, that guy's got a great job. That guy's got a great life. He's happier than I am. He's got better parents than I do.
Oh, so in this case, you're talking about someone who's better off than you, better suited than you.
Better, just a better person than you are in general. So you would show yourself versus a, you know, do you remember the
I wake up with a bad hair day. I show that picture versus George Clooney.
I can't think of it. Sure. I can't think of a better example of this. Do you remember the show Family Matters with Urkel?
Yes.
And then you remember Urkel could take the magic potion and he turned into Stefan Urkel. And that was like the hot version of whatever that guy, Jaleel White or whatever that
kid's
name was.
All he did, though, was just take his glasses off.
All he took is lowered his pants a little bit. Yeah. That is you versus the guy she told you not to worry about. So what you do is you find a goofy picture of two people that are kind of in the same sport. I did it with remember the Brad Stevens photo with the dorky white pants and the white shirt?
Yes.
Versus Quinn Snyder when he's looking his most dapper. of Quinn Snyder's. I think he's just like a, he dresses well. He's put together pretty well for an NBA coach versus, you know, Stan Van Gundy. Brad Stevens at times looks extra dorky. Quinn always has his hair done. I'm sure he spends a few hundred dollars on his haircut. You know, he's that type of guy. That's the meme.
Where and why did this begin?
I mean,
what's the point of all this?
Actually, I would assume, and this is, I'm not trying to be sexist here, I would assume women started this. And then people just realize, oh, this is just funny. We're just going to take this from everybody. We'll just assume it's our own. I would assume a woman started this and was making fun of a guy at the point, and rightfully so. And then it caught fire.
Okay, I'm watching a video now, not to go down the rabbit hole here, but I'm assuming if you know about internet memes, you know about Salt Bae.
Yeah.
Salt Bae is a good-looking Turkish man who's become a sensation because he's
a butcher, right?
Well, he's an artist,
yeah,
who chooses butchering as his medium. But yeah, the guy's got a little too much flair here. What's the heavy chef? He's a heavy set gentleman, long red hair.
Oh, yeah, I know who it is.
Batali. So I've got a video here of Batali throwing salt on some food, and he's not the best-looking gentleman. And they say you versus the guy she told you not to worry about. And then they show Salt Bae here. Yeah. Look, I'm not trying to be anti-meme for the simple reason that if you're against a meme, it just means you're too old. But what happened to just being funny? Nowadays, young people have to respond in a meme form, and they'll reference Salt Bae in real life. There's a 62% chance your audience doesn't know what Salt Bae is.
Okay, so here's
something.
So
when you use abbreviations and hashtags and inside jokes all the time, well, basically, you're the only one inside the joke.
But that is something that has happened lately, and I've thought about this with our show because, believe it or not, you and I step back and diagnose our show and try to figure out what works and what doesn't work and what we're doing and what our show is based on. We talk a lot about memes, but one thing you won't hear on our show, which you will hear in, I feel, just about every other radio show, whatever the medium, whatever, anything, it's just a series of Will Ferrell quotes, one after another, or The Office quotes, or Parks and Rec quotes, quotable TV shows.
We try not to do that.
Well, you've never seen any of the shows. You've never seen any of these movies that anyone's talking about, so it wouldn't make sense if I were to do it for you. I could do it. I've seen all the Will Ferrell movies. I know every Office episode. I know every Parks and Rec. But you've never seen them, so it wouldn't make any sense if I started quote. It's not an insult. In fact, I think it's better.
It's brought out a strength.
You've asked me to train a muscle that I think other people rely on.
It's called the creative muscle, Ben.
Exactly.
And I flex mine every day.
Exactly.
I didn't know I was holding back the mighty creative training.
You're doing the opposite.
Here's what it is, Ben. You just watched Fat Bastard. You just watched Mike Myers and you want to do get in my belly.
I just want to do Austin Powers.
You want
quotes.
To do that?
We don't do a lot of
Ben,
movie quotes on the show.
Hit us with your favorite Austin Powers quote. That's a man, baby. Or what is it? That's not mine.
You see?
It's the
you've
larger
never seen
pump.
The movie. You just don't.
Ben, I'm sorry.
You're
I'll
the worst guy to bounce quotes off. But that
what?
Is what it is. There is this new.
I love quotes.
And maybe it's always been this way.
Whammy!
But I think maybe Anchorman. More so than ever in the meme culture, which who developed memes originally? Was it Noam Chomsky who kind of came
was
up
it?
With the idea of memes?
It was Albert Gore.
Whoever it was who started the idea
Get
of memes. This pop culture language that you have to have. Now, language is always adapted with pop culture and new words get added in, whether it's surf culture or whatever it was in our past, hippie culture in the past. But what it has become recently is it's this meme culture. It's talking in quotes, in quips, in references. It's all referential. And you're not very referential in that sense. But I think it's fine. But that's where this comes from. That's where memes come from. It's referential language that has transpired or transformed from the internet to kind of your everyday life.
Whom and what is Noam Chomsky?
Noam Chomsky?
What is that?
I just thought it was a parenthetical
note. It doesn't
note.
Matter. He doesn't. He's a linguist. He doesn't matter.
Are you saying that a linguist invented memes?
Well, yeah, he invented term meme. He coined the term meme of speaking in that sense. Let's get to football at 50.
1320 KFAN brings you football at 50. BYU, Utah, the National Football League. Every hour at 10 till the hour, it's football at 50 on 1320 KFAN.
We're going streaking! Frank the Tank! Frank the Tank! Remember that movie? Right? Old school, man, that was good!
It may have been Richard Dawkins who invented memes. Maybe he invented memes. Maybe I'm mixing up two old gray-haired somewhat repugnant human beings.
Never heard of either one of them.
Oh, you've talked to me about Richard Dawkins in the past. Anyway,
Nietzsche.
Neither here Nietzsche. Nor there.
It's called Nietzsche.
Football at 50. Where are they now? Pac-12 classes.
Is Richard Dawkins destroying his own reputation?
2013 and 2014. Old white guys who are just really obnoxious.
I hate old white guys personally.
2013, 2014 quarterback classes in the Pac-12. Here's a couple of names you'll be familiar with. And we're talking about 27 players who committed to Pac-12 teams in 2013 and 2014. The names you'll be very familiar with are Anu Solomon. Jared Goff is a great name.
Sefa Lufau.
Troy Williams locally makes a lot of sense. He's a big recruit.
And that's it.
What do you know about Damian Hobbs?
Nope.
You a big Kyle Kemp fan?
Oh, Calvin Hobbs. Yeah, Calvin and Hobbs. A great cartoon back
Tyler
in the day.
Tyler Brugman?
I used to read the funnies.
How much Ashanti Woolard did you watch at UCLA? I forgot Chase Forrest was a human being. That we're naming all these names because there's a list of 27 names. The average football fan on the West Coast would recognize four names and maybe five when you're talking about guys who famously flamed out, like Max Brown, the top recruit at his position in the country, who started or who won one career game. I think he went 1-2 in his career. He lost to Alabama, he lost to Stanford, and he beat Utah State before Sam Darnold took his job against Utah.
There was 27 quarterbacks who signed with Pac-12 schools over the 2013 and 2014 signing classes. 16 of them transferred. That's almost 60%. Now, we told you the few names that did work out. Now, you know, this is par for the course in some ways because the quarterback position is one that only lets one guy star. And if one guy's a star, well, then no other star wants to sign with that team for a few years. So you have to consider that when it comes to the exclusivity of the position, but this is an alarming trend of guys that are not willing to be bench warmers. They want to show up and they want to start right away. It's good to have goals, but way too many guys without a strong enough resume are transferring or trying to transfer out of those schools. And the best example are some of these guys that have left Utah. Connor Manning left Utah and went to Georgia Southern. Brandon Cox left Utah and went to Crampton. That's a school about cramps.
Hampton.
Yeah.
Donovan Isom.
Donovan Isom also went to Crampton.
Went to Southern Louisiana.
Southern Crampton.
Five games in 2016 and didn't record any stats in 2016.
We got a piece of hate mail one day, I want to say, about Donovan Isom. No, we got a nasty phone call one day. Some guy called the show and cursed our producer out because we suggested Donovan Isom might check out defensive end or tight end because he wasn't going to factor in at quarterback. And the guy said, tell these two idiots to go look at Donovan Isom's Instagram page. And our response was, I don't like to look at players' social media pages. That's weird. But he said that there's a play on there that Donovan Isom posted that's basically better than any play ever created by man. And the play was a nice throw that Isom made in practice.
Rolling out to his left, yeah.
Eight springs to go. Great. It doesn't mean he should start. You know, just because a guy had a few offers coming out of high school at the quarterback position doesn't mean he'll matriculate into Tom Brady.
I think looking at this, and what's unfortunate here is I'd hate to see a kid, and I'm not going to tell any kid how to live their life. There's a lot of different paths to success, four-year universities, community colleges, never getting a college degree. It matters, but there are obviously different paths to success here. I would hate to see a kid transfer away from Cal in Luke Rubenzer, and he hasn't yet. He was converted to safety, so he'll still get a good degree. I would hate to see a kid like Chase Forrest transfer out of Cal because he didn't get the starting job at quarterback and end up not getting a Berkeley degree, but getting a degree from Southern Louisiana. Getting a degree from one of these schools that is small, and yeah, he'll have an opportunity to compete for at quarterback, but he's going to miss out on this multi-hundred-thousand-dollar education that will serve him for the rest of his life. And that's where, unfortunately, kind of youthful exuberance, the unwillingness to develop patience in your life can come back and pay off for you. But I'm not trying to sound like a 50-year-old. I get it. At 20, I didn't want to wait for anything. I wanted things handed to me. I'm not saying every kid does. These kids got to this point by working very hard in their lives. I'm not trying to disrespect that, and I get why they want to continue to chase that dream. But you chase that dream to help you pay off for the rest of your life, and I think you can hurt that by transferring away.
Well, you're absolutely right, but there's just no way to have that kind of perspective.
Sure.
You know, you have children now. You're a full-grown adult, at least mentally. But, you know, when you talk about a 16- and 17-year-old kid, you can't see past your own goals, and sometimes you need that. That's how Rome was burnt down in the day.
Nero. Big thanks to our producers today, J.P. Chunga.
No!
JP fiddled while our show burned. Find him on Twitter at JPKFan. Mitch Harper.
You're thinking of Fiddler on the Roof.
Find him on Twitter at Mitch_Harper. Follow Ray White on Twitter at TysonKFan.
Ray White.
That doesn't make any sense.
His name's not Ray White.
It's Tyson White.
Ray White.
He asked us specifically to call him Ray White.
He looked good today. Did you see him? Murdered out.
He was here today?
Tyson was murdered
Ray
out.
White.
All black on top, black
on
the bottom.
Satin black shirt.
Wore his Sean Kemp sneakers and brought in two ties and actually had JP, who's very fashion forward. So is Mitch. Actually, we got two pretty fashionable producers, the most in the market by a huge margin.
You guys chose his outfit
for
him?
Well, he had blue and black, and we thought, Tyson, you can't go black on black on black.
Well, Johnny
no,
Cash
they chose
did
his tie for him. Johnny Cash is a legend. And Tyson
so is Ray White.
Hosts a show here on Saturday at
so
10
Ray White.
So tune in tomorrow. We'll be back with you on Tuesday. It's Gunther and Ben.
On 1320 KFan.
Ray White.